أشهد أن محمد أشهد أن محمد الله.
السلام عليكم. Peace be unto you. We're back for another program of our Islam in Focus program. We're continuing our series dealing with the sources of Islam. Today we're having our fourth program dealing with the authenticity of the Quran. I'm your host, Hamid Rashid, and I have joining on the program as usual Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Brother Jamal, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
As is our fashion, could I have you perhaps very quickly summarize the main points that we touched on in our program last week?
Okay. Well, after the discussion of the preservation of the Quran during the lifetime of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, which was the first phase of preservation, we discussed briefly some of the circumstances which led to Abu Bakr, the first caliph or successor to the Prophet, to compile what has already been written of the Quran during the days of the Prophet in one volume, after, of course, the encouragement and suggestion of the companions. That took place almost less than 2 years after the death of Prophet Muhammad. We also discussed the reason why Zayd, the son of Thabit, was particularly commissioned to head this kind of task. And we said that his mandate did not include writing anything that was not already written in the lifetime of the Prophet. So what he did was simply to compile it together with the witnesses of people both who memorize as well as those who have written manuscripts. It was also indicated that that task went quite smoothly, and he did not face any problem in tracing everything that was written from the entire Quran. And then we started talking about the beginning of phase 3, which was not really writing the Quran or compiling the Quran as what happened during the days of the Prophet or the days of Abu Bakr, but rather the copying of the Quran after verifications and making various copies to be sent to different parts of the Muslim world, in accordance with the mode of recitation of Quraysh, in which the Quran was actually originally revealed. And he indicated that this copying was totally in conformity with the original manuscripts which were collected in the days of Abu Bakr, the first successor to the Prophet. So it was mainly to unite people on the original Qurayshite mode of expression.
What information do we have regarding these copies and where they were sent?
Well, the historians estimate them at least at 4 copies. Some say 5, some say as much as 7. But the 4 places where there is common agreement, that is the places where copies of this, you know, original or copy from the original manuscript were sent, include Medina, which was the seat of the caliphate, Basra and Kufa, both of them are in what is now Iraq, and Syria, in greater Syria. There are some other reports that there were additional copies also sent to Yemen, Bahrain, and that one copy also was sent to Mecca. This is basically the information we have on this. So at least there were 4 copies, to say, to be on the cautious side.
Are any of these earlier manuscripts that we've just been discussing, are they still in existence today?
Well, as far as the original manuscripts which were written at the time of the Prophet, peace be upon him, which was kept, you know, with Abu Bakr and Osman, and then Abu Bakr and then Hafsa, his wife, these were said to have been returned back to Hafsa, the wife of the Prophet, but after his death, of course, during the reign of Uthman the third caliph, after it was used to verify the second copying of the copies that were sent to different countries. As to what happened to that copy, there are 2 reports narrated in At-Tabari, in the first volume in his history, One says that it was washed or erased after Hafsa, the wife of the Prophet, died. But that again would be immaterial because it was already quoted in several other copies. Another report said that it was probably burnt during the reign of Marwan ibn al-Hakam. But whichever report is there, it doesn't matter because the copies that were sent to different parts of the Muslim world were checked carefully, verse by verse, and they were identical, in fact, with the original manuscripts. But as far as the four or seven copies that Osman, the third caliph, sent out, there is a report narrated by Ibn Kathir. And it is interesting to notice that that report was several hundred years after the death of the Prophet, because Ibn Kathir died in the year 774 from Hijrah, which would be about 750 years, roughly, after the death of the Prophet. But he saw a copy that he believed was the copy from the original copy that during the time of Osman, which was written on a hide, which he thought would be camel hide, looks like camel hide, in the masjid or mosque in Damascus. Sheikh Manna' al-Qattan, in his book in Arabic called Mabahith fi Ulum al-Quran, or you know, Studies in the Sciences of Quran, which was published in 1976, mentioned that there are reports also that the copy that was in Syria or Damascus ended up for some time in Leningrad, in the library of Leningrad during the Caesarian period, and then it was taken to Britain. This is an interesting matter that requires further research. However, there seem to be two manuscripts, very old ones, which are believed by scholars to date back to the time of Osman, the third caliph. That's from this original four that were sent out. One of them is found in a museum in Istanbul, Turkey, and it is said that it still has some mark from the blood of Osman, because you know Osman was said to have been martyred by the rebels while reciting the Quran. There are some people that reported to me personally when they have seen that in the Istanbul museum. There is another copy which is even more certain in Tashkent, Russia. And I have seen myself a recent publication by a group called Haider Adat Times, which is actually a Xerox copy or photographs of this original or old manuscript. And actually it shows it even in the old scripts, which didn't have the dots. And side by side, they published also the text that we have today in our hands. And it is interesting to notice that they are identical, and even though there may be a few passages missed from that copy in Tashkent, the interesting thing is that whenever you stop or begin, even in the middle of a verse, you find it identical with what we have in our hands today. You see my point? In other words, it is even more amazing than finding 100% of the manuscripts, because wherever you start or stop, for example, if a few lines are missing from the Tashkent manuscript, and you start on the third line, you compare it with the copy of the Quran that you have today, and you find the third line is identical.
Mm-hmm.
Which absolutely shows that, you know, it is identical, and that all the copies that we have today were just, you know, the same as this copy that goes back to the days of Uthman, which in turn were copied from the original manuscript written from the mouth of the Prophet, which was already available at the time of the death of the Prophet. Mm-hmm. So it's really amazing.
The lines are missing just because of the age and the wear and tear on the manuscript, you mean?
I don't know. It could be that. It could be that somebody tried to take some parchment away or something. I don't know what the reasons for these few lines missing, but it's amazing again that the whole thing is word for word.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that Osman had asked the people to burn any copy which didn't conform with or wasn't consistent with the original manuscript. Can we infer from that there were different Qurans or different versions of the Quran in existence?
Yes, that's true. That Osman actually asked people to burn, as you mentioned towards the end of the previous program, to burn any copy that's inconsistent with this. But this is Well, this has nothing to do with availability of different Qur'ans or versions of the Qur'an. They have always been one Qur'an throughout history. First of all, you have to remember that Uthman, the third caliph, did not do the copying by himself. Nor did he assign that just to one individual and depend totally on his integrity and knowledge. As mentioned towards the end of the previous program, it was almost like a committee of four of the most prominent companions of the Prophet who had full knowledge of the Qur'an. But even that task force, or committee as you might call it today, was not working in secret. Their work was open, and as we mentioned even last time, that there was a general call to anyone who had any copies to bring it, and anyone who memorized the Qur'an also participated in the process. In fact, it was reported that Ali himself, the fourth caliph after the Prophet, mentioned that specifically, and he said that what Uthman did, i.e. the copying of these copies of the Quran from the original manuscript, was done in the presence of all of us, and that the companions of the Prophet approved of this. So there was nothing really that was hidden or, you know, done by some person to hide anything. It should be noted also that this copying of the third phase was completed in the year 25 of Hijrah, or migration, which means approximately 12 years after the death of the Prophet. What does that mean? It means that many of those who were living at that time were contemporaries of the Prophet. Mm-hmm. And the 12 years difference, especially the younger ones or middle age ones. And many of those people, if not the majority of them, a large number of them, were people who memorized the Quran directly from the mouth of the Prophet during his lifetime. And as such, the copies that Uthman suggested that, you know, people should burn were not really other versions of the Quran, but basically copies which might have been written in a sloppy way, where there is a slight error here and there, which is not consistent with your verified one. And by the way, when you say verified, both in writing and by memorization of a large number of people.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, in most cases, it was the copies that had different modes of expression, which are different from the modes, quote-unquote, of expression of Quraysh, to which the Prophet belonged. From that, we understand that the preservation of the Quran was something beyond any question in terms of the honesty and integrity in which it was done, and that it was done in public. And there's no reports, even by those who murdered Uthman themselves, who were rebels. There's no proof or claim even that he changed even a single word of the Quran, or ordered the change of a single word of the Quran. It was done in public.
You touched on this concept of modes of expression just briefly last week as well. I wonder, and again here today, I wonder perhaps we could have you explain in a little more detail what is meant by modes of expression.
Okay. First, let me give some reference that would be useful. Among the best who wrote on the subject, there are many, but among the best is one called Jalal al-Din Asyuti in a book called Al-Itqan fi Ulum al-Quran. And among the recent references, there are plenty, but one of them is written by Sheikh Mamnu' al-Qattan, whose name I mentioned before. So I make some reference to that because he deals with the subject in some detail. To start with, the various tribes of Arabia all spoke Arabic. But each tribe had, you might say, dialect, even though that might be a word that might convey more than really need to be referred to. And that's why I prefer to call it actually mode of expression. Expression of the same meaning. In other words, the same meaning, the same message to be communicated. Some of them would use a slightly different word to convey the same message. Among all of those tribes, the mode of expression of the tribe of Quraysh, that is from which the Prophet was born, was the most prominent in view of the prominence of the tribe itself, of their closeness to the Kaaba, the Holy Shrine, their service to the pilgrims, their engagement in trade. So there were a number of reasons why they were the most prominent, and actually was regarded as perhaps the most eloquent of expressions in the Arabic language. That is why it was quite natural that the Quran would be revealed in the mood of Quraysh. But despite all this, we find that the memorization of the Quran was one of the most crucial factors in preserving it from change or tampering.
Mm-hmm.
And now, for some tribes, it was a little bit hard for them, especially for some expressions or words, to express the same meaning, to memorize or understand. And since the Quran was intended actually to be memorized and to be understood, there was some kind of a sanction to them to pronounce the Quran or some words which they found difficult in the mode of expression of their own particular tribe.
You mentioned that these modes were sanctioned. Who was it that sanctioned the modes, and is there any documentation on that sanction?
Right. There's plenty of documentation. But first of all, to answer the first part of the question, there's consistent evidence that the concession to use these variations or variant modes of expression of the same thing was sanctioned by Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, himself. Let us examine some of those evidences. First of all, in Bukhari and Muslim, the most two trusted sources of prophetic sayings, the Prophet said that Angel Gabriel taught me the Quran on one mode of expression. Apparently, he's referring to the mode of Quraysh,
mm-hmm.
his tribe. Then I asked him, or told him, to increase it. So he said that Angel Gabriel taught him the Quran again on a second mode of expression. That's the same thing, but in a slightly different way of expressing some words. And then he said he repeated that also for the third time, and he asked for more. The Prophet asked for more flexibility, so that it makes it easier for people to recite. And in the first time, it was said that Angel Gabriel told him that, notice here he says, Allah, or God, capital G, Allah command you to teach your ummah, or your followers, on seven modes of expression, which means that the sanction was not coming from the Prophet on his own, it was not coming from Angel Gabriel, but God, or Allah, permitted this mode of revelation, of expression, on the basis of the request and pleading of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, for the purpose of making it easier on other tribes to understand. Another version of the same hadith or prophetic saying was narrated also in Muslim, which speaks directly even about Gabriel coming to the Prophet and giving him that particular directive, and that the Prophet commented basically that my ummah or my followers can't really bear to all recite in one mode of expression. He refers also to his contemporaries. So these were increased until it came to seven. There is another evidence also that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, did not introduce these modes of expression himself, that it was revealed. That's nothing that he himself made up or anything. And one sound, sayings of the Prophet narrated in several prophetic sayings like Bukhari and Muslim and Abu Dawood, Nisa'i, Tirmidhi, that Umar, one of the prominent companions of the Prophet, said, I heard a man by the name of Hisham ibn Hakim reciting a surah from the Quran, known as Surah Al-Furqan. That was, by the way, during the lifetime of the Prophet. But I heard him reciting the surah in a slightly different way that I didn't hear or learn from Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And then Umar said that he went to him after he finished his prayer. He went to that man, Hisham, and said, you know, how are you reading this, and I haven't heard the Prophet reading that, and they started, you know, arguing about it. So Umar took that man, Hisham, to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, And Omar told him that he's, you know, reciting something slightly different from what he taught us. So the Prophet said to Hisham, recite that chapter of Surah. He recited it. And the Prophet said, yes, it was revealed like that. And then he said to Omar, you recite it now. So Omar recited with that slight, you know, variation in mode of expression. And the Prophet said, that's correct also. This is how it was revealed. So from this hadith, it's obvious then that the Prophet didn't say, this is why what I approved or sanctioned. He said, how it was revealed, which means that even these modes of expression were sanctioned and given to the Prophet as they are. And then he added, after talking to both men, the Prophet added, he said, this Quran was revealed on 7 modes of expression. So recite of it whatever is easy on you, or whatever is, you know, consistent with your ability. In addition to this particular quotations, according to Jalal al-Din Siyuti, this famous scholar, he mentioned as many as 21 companions of the Prophet who narrated basically the same thing, that they were permission and concession to recite the Quran with these moves. So there is no difference that I know of about the existence of these moves, but the difference may arise between scholars as to what exactly is the meaning or interpretation of modes, because the original Arabic word actually say ahruf. What they mean by that or what they understand by that is quite a wide field, you know, that there are lots of specialized studies on that.
Mm-hmm.
But the existence is there, yes, and it's sanctioned.
Well, I realize that it might be a rather big topic, but I think it would be very helpful if you could, in as brief a fashion as possible, familiarize us with the various interpretations of the mode of expression.
All right. According to Jalal al-Din Suyuti, he mentioned that there have been so many opinions on that. In fact, he said there might be as many as 40 possible interpretations of the exact meaning of what constitutes really modes of expression.
Mm-hmm.
But that number should not really look alarming, because many of those opinions also are overlapping. So maybe you can just examine some of these major ones. Instead of mentioning them and evaluating them, perhaps we might also do that at the same time, just mention the interpretation and why that might be considered weak, until we end up with one that seems to be the one that mm-hmm. most jurists or scholars accept. One interpretation, which is a little far off, they say 7 modes of expression means that in the Quran there are 7 basic things. There is command, there is prohibition, there is lawful, there is unlawful, there is verses which are conclusive, that is in meaning, that could not be interpreted in two ways, and there is allegorical, which might be understood differently, and proverbs. So they say these are the 7. Well, this opinion is rather weak, and the reason for being weak is if you refer back to this sayings or this tradition that we refer to,
mm-hmm.
we find that the Prophet sanctioned 2 different modes of expression, and there is no contradiction between them.
Mm-hmm.
But if we take the 7 modes, for example, as lawful and unlawful, then they are the opposite of each other,
mm-hmm.
and they could not be sanctioned. In other words, that seems to be a philosophical subdivision, but not very realistic one. Another weak opinion also, it says that the number 7 does not necessarily mean number 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, you know, but the number 7 is used sometimes to refer to too many. And it is true that in the Arabic language, 7 does not always mean numerical 7. However, in the context of this particular sayings of the Prophet that we quoted, that he was allowed to recite in one mode, then another, and then he said he's kept increasing until it reached 7. So it means actually 7. So that again seems to be a sort of weak type of interpretation. Another mode of, or way of explaining it, is that the 7 modes of recitation refers to recitation of the same word in a different enunciation, if you will. I'll give an example of this, just to make it easy. About Prophet Moses, for example. His name in Arabic is Musa. Musa. So they say, for example, in some expressions, it may appear as Musa. It is the exact letters, the exact word, but instead of Musa, Musa. That's the kind of accent. However, that seems to be a good interpretation, but perhaps does not fully explain the notion of modes of expression, because there is evidence that it was not only restricted to the exact words, just with different enunciation, but in some cases there were even alternative words reported to express the same meaning. So that may not necessarily be a fair one if one has to look critically into the matter. Another opinion, which is again reasonably acceptable but perhaps might have some weaknesses also, is that it seems that the modes of expression refer to aspects which pertain to the grammar, to the Arabic grammar. And they say, for example, one of those terms could be whether you speak about the singular or plural, whether you talk about putting one word instead of another word, or one letter instead of another letter, one extra letter here or there to express the same thing. It includes also, among the seven, they say a word that gives exactly the same meaning. Like in the Quran, for example, it uses the term ahl, which means in different Arab tribes, dialects, suf, both of them mean will. So they refer to that as one part of it also. That seems to be more supported type of explanation. However, it seems that another explanation, which is very close to this one, seems to be more likely, and that is the term itself, which is known or accepted by major Arab tribes, was also used to refer to the identical meaning. So it's more specific than the previous opinion, but actually refers directly to the variations of words. I know the topic, as indicated earlier, is a bit technical in nature, but I hope that at least we can conclude from that modes of recitation or modes of expression, if you will, in all interpretations, or at least major interpretations, refer to the same meaning expressed in the Quran with the slight variations of expression depending on the dialect or the tongue, if you will, of different tribes.
Mm-hmm.
Very brief. I don't know how much you can.
Take something so complex and condense it in such a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you, Brother Jamal, for interesting the program. I want to thank you for watching and invite you back next week. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you. Thank you for watching.
أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله.